Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gents. This is a boy Casanova from Orlando, Florida, on this awesome and international podcast, Good Wine and Good Laughs, Season 8, Episode 15. Ladies and gents, and today's topic is O.J. Simpson dies at 76. You know shortly the type of wine I am drinking. So, ladies and gents, let's get this party started. Let's go. Alright, ladies and gents, once again, this is a boy Casanova from Orlando, Florida, on this awesome international podcast, Good Wine and Great Laughs, Season 8, Episode 15. Once again, today's topic is O.J. Simpson dies at age of 76. And ladies and gents, today is Saturday, April the 13th, 2024, and the weather here in Orlando will be with plenty of sunshine, highs of 80 degrees, lows of 56. And before I jump right on today's topic, ladies and gents, I gotta talk about the wine of the day here at Casa Casanova. And ladies and gents, today I found this wine. It's an Italian wine. The name is Villa Esparina, by this brand called Gavi, G-A-V-I. And unfortunately, on this bottle, there's no detail or any hint information about the wine, but I checked the internet and I found here on this website called thewine.com some information about the wine. And once again, this is a wine from Italy. It's a vintage of 2022. And according to the website, wine.com, it said that the winemaker notes described this wine as a bright yellow color, delicate bouquet of flowers and fruit with a scent of peach. Full and rich flavor, the complete grape ripening gives a wine which is soft on the palate with a fine aromatic flavor at the end. On their website also has a professional rating from this gentleman called Mr. James Suckling. And Mr. Suckling described this wine as a creamy and fruity white with sliced apples and pear as well as some flint, parsley, and fennel undertones. Medium body, fresh and satisfying. Drink now. Mr. Suckling, you don't have to tell me twice about drinking right now. So let me see what this white wine from Italy is all about. And once again, ladies and gents, like I do every Saturday, you can see a beautiful, if you go to my YouTube channel, you can see now my video about this wine. You can see the image of this wine bottle as well on all my social media, such as Instagram, Facebook, my Facebook page, as well my LinkedIn page. For this podcast, you will see a very beautiful, clear picture of the wine. So, if you like to get it, I found this wine at Costco right here in Orlando, Florida. You may find on your local Costco if you're a member of Costco. If you're not a member of Costco, or you maybe can go to BJ's, they may have it there too, I don't know. But like I say, I facilitate for you all the information. Or you can go to thewine.com and see it for yourself. Once again, the wine's name is Villa Esparina, by this brand called Gavi. So let's drink. I like the color of this wine. Excuse me. The bouquet. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a very excellent white wine. I definitely recommend it. My rate for this wine, I would give a 10. It's very, very good. All right, ladies and gents, let's jump right on today's topic. And what you're going to listen to on today's episode, ladies and gents, is going to be a great, great interview between Stephen A. Smith and Mr. Carl Douglas. Mr. Carl Douglas was one of the lawyers from the OJ's defense team on his trial in 1995. So let me pause the background music right here and jump right on it. So let's go. 1 second.
At least three times a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday over the digital airwaves of YouTube. As usual, I take a moment to thank all of my followers and subscribers. Appreciate the love that y'all keep on giving me. We're rapidly approaching 615,000 subscribers. So once again, thank you so much, because I wouldn't be here if y'all didn't want me here. So thank you so much. Usually I get in other platitudes and all of that stuff, but I ain't got time for that today, because I got to get to a particular issue that's been percolating in the world of news / sports over the last 24 hours or so. So we're going to get started right with it, with the passing of O.J. Simpson, the iconic athlete revered for his play on the football field and later reviled as an accused double murderer of his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend, Ronald Goldman. Simpson died Thursday in Las Vegas, surrounded by family after battling prostate cancer. He was 76 years old. He was acquitted of the double murder charges of his former wife and her friend, but later was found liable in a separate civil trial. Cato Kaelin, an actor living on Simpson's property at the time of the murders, told USA Today he thought Simpson was guilty of the killings, saying, quote, "I don't know if he had that moment of penance that he confessed to whoever he believes in, and I don't know if he's going to heaven or hell." End quote. Who gives a shit what you think? Nobody should. Grown man living on somebody else's property for free, by the way, basically acting like a vagabond. And when you gave testimony during the trial, you didn't help anybody's case. So nobody cares now. But I will say this. When it comes to O.J. Simpson, I've been on the record, ladies and gentlemen. I believe the man is guilty. If it were up to me, he'd be under the damn jail. I think he was guilty of double murder. I think it was a crime of passion. But in the same breath that I feel that way, I'm certainly not going to lambaste or malign the jury, because I understand the times that we were living in. Just the same way as you can sit up there and just find yourself shaken in disgust, disbelief, and absolute sympathy because of the murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. Your heart goes out to their families as well for their loss. In the same breath that you can do all of those things, you can also look at the LAPD back in those times, the actions and the behaviors of police officers against African Americans throughout the city of Los Angeles and its surrounding areas, and say you understand how everything happened. It wasn't a civil case, it was a criminal case. And all you needed was a scintilla of doubt and tampering with evidence, lying on the stand, or taking the fifth, rather, by officers certainly fall under that category. So while we can lament and obviously have heavy hearts for the loss of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman, we can also appreciate where the jury was coming from in the mid-90s, in the aftermath of Rodney King being beat to a pulp, practically slaughtered by police officers who ultimately were acquitted despite their transgressions being caught on video. Folks get it. Especially folks in the black community. Now, I joked around on many, many occasions, and I said, hey, if I was an attorney and I had the evidence that Marsha Clark and Christopher Darden had at their disposal against Johnny Cochran and his defense team, OJ would be under the jail. I would have beaten Johnny Cochran. And that is how I met my next guest, who was absolutely appalled that I would suggest such a thing, jokingly or not, instantly called me, found my number, called me, and made sure to lambaste me for thinking such a thing, about the great Johnny Cochran. He's here to offer more perspective on the legacy of O.J. Simpson. Obviously, he's a man who served alongside Johnny Cochran, like I just said, in the defense team. He was a member of the defense team. He is now a founding partner in private practice at the law firm Douglas Hicks in Los Angeles, California. Please welcome to the show my buddy, the one and only attorney himself, Carl Douglas. What's going on, man? I knew eventually you'd come on the podcast. I knew you eventually come here, Carl. How you doing, man? How's everything?
My brother, first of all, thanks for having me. I have been trying to get on this podcast for so long. I regret that it takes OJ's passing for you to make me one of your guests.
Well, listen, this is the first time you've been on the show, but it won't be the last. And obviously, you and I have gotten to know each other over the last few years. I'm honored to have you on the show, and I thank you for being on here today. It is obvious why you are here. OJ has passed. So I'm going to start this off by asking Carl what I've said to you on several occasions. I know what I feel. Carl Douglas, former defense attorney with the OJ team, a defense attorney extraordinaire even now, I ask you this question. Now that OJ has passed, are you willing to say that the man was guilty of double murder?
It's funny, Stephen A., because everyone the last day or so has been asking me that same question. And let me tell you my answer, man. Before I came on the case, certainly, I, like most of America, thought that OJ was responsible for both murders. And then I spent 18 months of my life working on one case. And then I spent hours at a time to speak to the man, asking questions and getting to know him better than I did. And I go away from this with two thoughts, Stephen A. One, the prosecution failed in their burden, not to prove whether OJ was guilty or innocent. They failed in their burden to prove him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, not by a preponderance of the evidence, but beyond a reasonable doubt. And another thing, Stephen A., I say, no matter what you or how you fall on the guilt or innocence scale, I will go to my grave believing that the Los Angeles Police Department and members of that department did something with the evidence to convict someone whom they thought was guilty. I'm a civil libertarian, my brother. And if the police can put their fingers on the scale to help convict O.J. Simpson, then none of us are safe.
Carl,
and to be clear, the mere fact that he died, man, doesn't mean that my position is going to change or I'm going to somehow have some revelatory enlightenment that's going to change my perspective for the last 30 years.
I understand that. And knowing you the way that I have over the last few years, I know I'm not going to move you from your position. But let me try anyway, as I often have in the past. Okay, the prosecution, led by Marsha Clark and Christopher Darden, clearly blew the case. She didn't want Christopher Darden to compel O.J. Simpson to try on a glove. He didn't listen. Clearly, that was a problem, okay? We also have to take into consideration, I think Officer Van Natter, if I remember correctly, I was listening to Alan Dershowitz on television last night talk about how he had tampered with evidence. There was an overwhelming level of evidence against O.J. Simpson, but as a defense attorney, the obligation is to present reasonable doubt where it's obviously available to you, and clearly the LAPD, prone to misbehaving and prone to other transgressions that we don't need to get into at this particular moment in time, at least back in the 90s, they messed with the evidence and got caught. So that was the reasonable doubt. So I get where you're coming from. That is enough to find him not guilty because clearly there was reasonable doubt and that's all you have to create. That's not what I'm asking, though. I'm talking about the blood in the Bronco. I'm talking about the blood trail around the house. I'm talking about the blood on the shoes, okay, of O.J. Simpson. I'm talking about the DNA evidence that clearly shows he was at the scene. Are we willing to concede, even as he is gone now and has to deal with the Lord for whatever transgressions he may or may not have done, are we willing to concede that the evidence definitely points to him being guilty?
Well, certainly, Stephen A., I will concede because thank you for that major concession that you have just made. If I had been sitting on the civil jury, 2 years later in Santa Monica courthouse. And the question asked was whether there is a preponderance of evidence, 50.01%, that he was responsible. I understand wholeheartedly how that jury could rule based on the evidence in the case that there was indeed more likely than not proof that was presented. But we're not in the civil arena talking about this particular case, and you cannot ignore the transgressions of the LAPD. Stephen A., it's like you have a big bowl of spaghetti, man, and you love it, and you're eating that spaghetti. And while eating that spaghetti, you come across a roach inside the spaghetti. Question is, do you keep eating that spaghetti, Stephen A., or do you throw out the entire bowl?
You throw it out.
This case was the biggest bowl of spaghetti I had ever seen in 40 years as being a lawyer. But there were roaches in that spaghetti. You had a detective who took the Fifth Amendment because he had lied under oath in a murder case. The jury came across those roaches, and rather than keeping to eat that spaghetti, they threw out the entire bowl. I commend them. They followed their oath, and they should be commended for what they did.
Just for clarification for our audience, who was the person that took the fifth? Was that Mark Furman?
That's Mark Furman.
Okay, that's Mark Furman.
Never in a murder case had I ever seen a primary detective take the Fifth Amendment, acknowledging that he was caught in a lie. That is a serious transgression that cannot be ignored.
And who was the officer? Was I right in Sam Van Natta, the officer that tampered with evidence, that was accused of tampering with evidence?
There's one officer took a vial of blood from the crime scene out to Santa Monica. One officer was carrying sneakers in his car. There were scientific technicians that were bringing sheets from inside the house and covering the bodies, making for cross-contamination, picking up things with their bare hands and not using gloves. There was a plethora of issues that led the jury to conclude that he was innocent, Stephen A., but that the prosecution had failed in their burden to prove him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
OJ, Made in America, the producers for that that docuseries, which was absolutely positively phenomenal. You participated in that along with prosecutor Marcia Clark, because there were perspectives that both of you wanted to make sure was out there in terms of viewing the case through the lens of you guys going into the murder trial. You felt compelled to be involved in that. You wanted to give folks context as to what the times were like at that particular moment in the year 1995. Obviously, the murder was in 1994. The trial obviously took place throughout most of 1995. The backdrop from that was a few years earlier when Rodney King was just beaten to a pulp by the LAPD, which was a video the world saw. Paint the picture of the context going into the trial of the century, that of OJ on trial for double murder, what that was like for you and what that was like for the city of Los Angeles and the world knowing what was going on in the city of Los Angeles. Paint that picture for us, please.
Sure, Stephen A. I sat down with Ezra Edelman for 5 hours to talk about the world during the OJ Simpson
producer
trial.
For OJ, Made in America.
Correct. In part because Johnny Cochran was no longer alive, so I felt it my honor, my obligation to stand up for him and his legacy. No one can understand or appreciate, Stephen A., the O.J. Simpson verdict without understanding the context and the atmosphere of Los Angeles then. Not only had there been the Rodney King beating, but there had been the acquittal of those four officers in Simi Valley. There had also been the death of Latasha Harlins, a 16-year-old high school student who was walking away from a shop owner and shot in the back of the head and then given probation. People who shoot dogs are given jail time, but she shot a black girl in the back of the head and was given probation. I dare say, Stephen A., you could stop any black person at random on the streets of Los Angeles in 1995, and they could give you an example of either themselves, a family member, or a friend who had been unfairly treated by the Los Angeles Police Department. It was in that atmosphere, coupled with the evidence that we uncovered, that Mark Fuhrman had tried to file a workers' comp claim because he so hated black and brown suspects and prisoners that he would use abject violence against them. That he would use the N-word all the time, and though he denied it on the stand, we had several witnesses that could confirm it. So it was in that atmosphere that we were able to exploit the distrust that the African-American community held for members of the police department. And when that distrust was coupled with real evidence and real issues, they were open to the suggestion that something was wrong. It's not the way the community thinks of the police in Santa Monica or Beverly Hills or the West Side. It may not be the way that people think of the police in parts of Manhattan or New York City, but it was the circumstance and the cauldron in which this trial took place in the year of 1995 in downtown Los Angeles.
If the officers who beat Rodney King to a pulp, on video, by the way, for the world to see, before getting acquitted, by the way, if those officers had been found guilty, do you believe that the same jury would have found O.J. Simpson not guilty if those officers had not been acquitted?
Stephen A., I was on the defense team, bro. I thought we won because there was better lawyering, bro. So whether Rodney King and the verdict had happened or not, the evidence was still the same. The lawyering on the defense side as opposed to the prosecution team was the same. And I believe the results would have been the same. Stephen A., you hear about the allegations that the defendants played the race card. But you forget that the prosecution brought on a black lawyer on the first day of trial that had never sat in the courtroom during 6 weeks of jury selection. They brought on a black lawyer because there was a black jury, and they played the race card. In Los Angeles, if you are a trial lawyer and ignore the dynamics of race in this community, you will do so at your own peril as a lawyer.
You're talking about Christopher Darden, and I'll get to him in a second. But before I get to him, what about Marcia Clark, who was the lead prosecutor in this case? Doing my research, she wanted to provide a perspective herself. And one of the things that Edelman highlighted, OJ, Made in America, one of the things that was highlighted and one of the things you talked about that you found shocking is that for some reason they believed that having a female, a woman, as a prosecutor, that she was going to be relatable to the black women on the jury. And I'm scratching my head like, I've seen Marcia Clark. The one thing that I can guarantee you is that she's not a black woman. Why would you assume with the climate that existed in the city of Los Angeles at that particular moment in time that this woman would be more relatable to black females on the jury than, dare I say, a black woman or the black men that were opposite of her trying to defend O.J. Simpson? Did that shock you?
Well, I know from having spoken to Marcia and read things over the last 30 years that in her history as a prosecutor, she had always been able to relate to African-American women. She would talk about the fact that they would often contact her after the trial and she would stay in contact with them. So she had that relationship that was contrary to her own jury consultant advisors. But she forgot to acknowledge or understand that a black woman is the wife, the mother, the sister, the aunt of black men. And that sense would predominate because, as I said earlier, everybody in LA has an occasion when a friend, a colleague, or a family member has been treated unfairly by a police officer. So that dynamic of her history was the reason why she thought she could relate. Both sides had done focus groups, and we found and they knew that black women surprisingly, counterintuitively, were the greatest supporters of O.J. Simpson, and they thought less of Nicole Brown, and basically that she was part of the problem.
Why the hell did Christopher Darden decide to let O.J. try on that glove?
Because, bruh, trial lawyers have big egos. Johnny Cochran in 1995 was the GOAT among the black legal community in Los Angeles. Chris Darden saw a chance to take down the man. He was a trash talker. He came into the courtroom talking trash that very first day.
Chris Darden? You said Christopher Darden? Christopher Darden was talking trash to Johnny Cochran and y'all?
The very first day in the courtroom, when the lights were off, when the camera turned off, both of them would be talking trash. Chris Darden always talked trash.
This is Stephen A., baby. This is me, Carl. What'd he say? Well, I want to know, when you say he was talking trash, I need to give me an example. What would he say?
Get that man over there, his guilty ass. What are we going to do? We're going to take his ass to... It's funny, man, because Christopher Darden used to work in the department of the LAPD that would investigate officer-involved shootings. Johnny Cochran used to defend prosecute cops on behalf of victims of police abuse. So we had a great relationship because we always worked together in a civil and criminal way. He would never bring charges, but certainly he knew that our goals in terms of police misconduct were aligned. So the history was there. As a trial lawyer, Stephen, as you can imagine, you want to be on the free throw line with the ball in your hand and the clock running out. Mm-hmm. Chris Darden saw a moment, he thought, where he could take down the man. And this was his opportunity to show that OJ, in fact, was the murderer. If you watch the scene of that iconoclastic setting, the most dramatic moments of my life in 44 years as a lawyer, because I was two seats away from OJ Simpson, Johnny had come from a sidebar and said, okay, guys, they're going to have him try on the glove. Don't anybody react. Mm-hmm. There's a camera on the wall looking down on us, and everything that we did was going to be scrutinized. So we had to have poker faces. And no one knew what was going to happen until he put on that glove. It didn't fit. And he went into naked gun mode. Hey, walking over to the jury. It was indeed the most dramatic moment of my life. And you could see Marsha Clark slinking down in her seat as it was going on because it was blowing up in their face.
Real quickly, did you know the glove wasn't going to fit? Because I remember reading that he was taking medication and ultimately you stopped because if you stopped then his fist would get bigger. What truth was there to that stuff?
No one had any concept that there would ever be a glove demonstration until the day of. So anyone that said that OJ stopped taking medication because of his arthritis so his hands would be bigger is balderdash, I say. We were going to have our own demonstration privately, Stephen A. We asked Judge Ito for permission at a lunch break for OJ, the glove, and a guard to be in the courtroom so that we could do our own demonstration. Because at a break, Johnny Cochran had gone up to the witness stand when the glove witness was on the stand, and he compared that glove to his hand. OJ had massive hands.
Got it.
And after Johnny thought it wouldn't fit his hand, he knew it wouldn't fit OJ's long fingers, but no one had any concept of that going on prior to that day.
Last couple of questions because I got to get on out of here. And thank you so much for your time, Carl Douglas.
Sure.
We sit here now that we've seen all of this. One of the moments that I remember was Christopher Darden up at the podium after the not guilty verdict came in and then collapsing practically in the arms of his colleagues from the prosecution's office. Why do you think that happened? Was it because the case was lost? Was it because he was embarrassed? Was it because they knew ultimately they just didn't do a good job of prosecuting O.J. Simpson. What do you think it was?
I've known Chris for 35, 40 years. He fell into the arms of Mrs. Goldman because he understood he was responsible in that moment for the greatest defeat in his life. He was crushed by that verdict. He was crushed by the recriminations that he would feel in the black community, unfairly as it was, being a part of the prosecution team when most of black America, much of black America, was supporting the verdict that took place. And in that moment, the crushing nature of that defeat caused him to fall into the hands of Mrs. Goldman. And to this day, more people comment negatively about that scene almost as much as the failed glove demonstration.
Racial reckoning in America, not just in the city of Los Angeles, but nationwide in the aftermath of OJ being acquitted. You've been around for a long time. You've been in Los Angeles all of these years. Talk to us, this audience, as a closing remark from you about what times are like now with the LAPD, with law enforcement, period, with the racial reckoning of America compared to what it was prior to OJ being prosecuted for double murder.
Stephen A., it's regrettable that the more things change, the more they remain the same. And it is even more regrettable that our country is probably as divided in 2024, if not more so, along the racial corridors that we find ourselves than it was in 1995. We have all gone to separate corners these days, and we only speak to others who are with us and sharing the same viewpoints. Only when we come out of our corners and come together and have conversations is there ever gonna be any true hope of dealing with the racial dynamics of this country, and they will continue to exist until we make changes for that.
Defense attorney for O.J. Simpson, the one and only Carl Douglas, right here on the Stephen A. Smith Show over the digital airwaves of YouTube. My friend, I really, really appreciate you taking time, man. Thank you for joining me and enlightening us about the case and everything that surrounded it. Really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother. And next time, please have me on again.
I will. You.
Yes, ladies and gents, like I said, so like I said, it's a great, great interview with Mr. Attorney Carl Douglas on that. And my two cents about the whole situation, ladies and gentlemen, about on the passing of O.J. Simpson. First of all, I'm not going to say anything about O.J. Simpson. Okay, let me make this clear, because there are feelings involved related in my respect to the children of O.J. Simpson now on the moment of grief and dealing with aftermath of the passing, now working on the arrangements for the funeral yard or whatever they're doing. I'm not going to make any comment because I don't want that on my account. When I go to the upper room, ladies and gents, because I truly believe that what you do on this earth is go to eternity. Whatever you say, whatever the seeds that you sow, you throw over there, you're going to reap. That's what I'm saying. All right? My folks, you heard those two gentlemen talking about. For those that were alive, when that happened, including me, I remember seeing the news, but I was not in the United States yet. In 1995, I still live in Brazil. So I had just the limited information, but was on the local news related to what's going on the case. And back in the days, you did not have internet like you do now. So it was easy access. No cell phones. There's a whole lot of things that do not have back in the days that we do now. But my conclusion about that is just like my thoughts and prayers go to the children of O.J. Simpson. That's what I stand for right now, okay? Because they don't have nothing to do with O.J. Simpson, what he has done or what he did not do related to the killing of his ex-wife and her friends. And also, I don't want to explore, talk about Nicole and her friend related to the family of Nicole and the other guy that ended up getting killed. Right? So I'm not going to explore that either. So for those that lived, you know the story. You heard from the two gentlemen right here. Now you can make your conclusion about what you think. My personal opinion on just the case, I truly believe that OJ was guilty. But the lawyers did their job, and you like it or not, like Mr. Carl said, they have better lawyers on OJ Simpson team than under the state team, right? Mr. Carl listed a lot of stuff that was happening, because I remember watch on TV when they have the beating of Rodney King, and that thing was brutal. That thing was crazy. I'm surprised that that man survived that brutal that brutal beating. And plus, like he stated, you know, all police officers were acquitted at that time. You know, that's crazy, man. It's crazy. It's crazy, crazy, crazy. You know? And the young lady, also the 16 years old that was killed, she also come to the Asian store, a store that was owned by Asian, and this lady thought that she was stealing. She was leaving the store, she's not taking anything, and the Asian woman decided to shot the young lady in the head. And you know, she got probation. Look at that, how crazy that thing is. You know what I mean? So, my two cents about the whole situation, it's just like, I throw the ball to you. You make a conclusion about the situation. I'm just like concerned about O.J. Simpson's kids on this moment of grieving that they lost their father. You know? And on the last moment that he was the family, just the family can tell you if they want disclosure that, you know, because he's passing with his family around, only the family can disclose if they decide to. What, I don't know if they were praying, whatever. No, if he made peace with the Almighty. That's topic for another conversation, ladies and gentlemen. So, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank all of you that listen to this awesome and international podcast. Please keep sharing with our family and friends. Good Wine and Great Laughs podcast is coming all the way from the bottom, moving straight to the top, aiming to be on the number one spot. Please feel free to visit my YouTube channel, ladies and gentlemen. Leave your comments, subscribe, click on the like button of every video that you're watching, and click on the notification button so you can get the notification as soon. I have a YouTube channel video available. Appreciate your support. Once again, this is your boy Casanova. Please be safe, be kind, and be blessed. And I'll see you next Saturday. Holla! Coming from the bottom, moving straight to the top. Coming with the pull up for the number one spot. Pushing my back like a push out on the block. Holding my girl, sucker rappers get loose. Coming from the bottom, moving straight to the top. Coming with the pull up for the number one spot. Pushing my back like a push out on the block. Holding my girl, sucker rappers get loose. Coming from the bottom, moving straight to the top. Coming with the pull up for the number one spot. Pushing my back like a push out on the block. Holding my girl, sucker rappers get loose. Coming from the bottom, moving straight to the top. Coming with the pull up for the number one spot. Pushing my back like a push out on the block. Holding my girl, sucker rappers get loose. Coming from the bottom, moving straight to the top. Coming with the pull up for the number one spot. Pushing my back like a push out on the block.